Call the House Tax Committee to order. Members, we do have a quorum. Representative Dabney moves the minutes of March 21st, 2012. Are there any additions or corrections? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Dabney.
Anytime, Mr. Chair.
Okay, what we have before us now, I will move House File 2072. And members, today we're going to be looking at merging basically three bills. It'd be the
five bills.
I know what three of them are, and I have no clue what the other two are, but I'm sure they're good. Okay, we have the policy bill, the technical bill from the department. We're going to put 2072 in. That's what that is, and we're going to talk. We haven't talked about that. That had a property tax hearing. We're going to talk about that today, and that is technical changes. Those are things that need to be done because of a definition of the word exclusion, and I'll get into that in a little bit. Runbeck bill. Eliminating the obsolete provisions, and the David's Public Finance Bill. Have we heard that? Oh, we've heard that, and it was really good.
Yeah.
Okay, so with that, we're looking at House File 2072. Then be my intention to open up for discussion on the governor's technical and policy bills and all those things. And we really, you know, you can offer all the amendments you want. That's fine and dandy, but we really want to keep this so that it's something the governor will sign. So, with that being said, we have Mr. Michael and Mr. Hines with us. We're very fortunate to have them with us today to go over 2072. Before we get started, is there anyone in the audience that wishes to testify for House File 2072 or with concerns thereof? The department or will be as a resource? Okay. But first of all, Representative Crawford, do you have an introduction to make?
Sure. Thanks, Mr. Chairman. We have some visitors from Pine City High School. I'd like them to stand up and introduce themselves.
Absolutely.
All right. Welcome.
Welcome to the Tax Committee. Kathy Honey walks in and we erupt into applause.
Yeah.
Okay. Pine City Dragons?
Yeah.
Is that correct? Are you like what? Sophomores, seniors, juniors?
Freshmen.
Oh, freshmen. Okay. Welcome to the Tax Committee. Glad to have you here. Okay. Mr. Michael or Mr. Hines?
Mr. Chairman, I guess I'll start in the absence of the Carlson brothers, and we'll try to explain what's going on with this bill. I think it might be useful to essentially go a little bit through the background about why the bill is here and then how it was prepared, and then we'll talk about what the bill does. This bill is an outgrowth of the 2011 enactment of the new market value exclusion for homestead property. And what happened with that is, as it was passed by the legislature, those of us that were involved in the process, both on the inside and the outside, including the Department of Revenue, during the process, did not sort of anticipate or realize that this exclusion, because of the way the Department of Revenue has handled a few of the minor exclusions that were enacted before this for things like this old house, the mold exclusion, this old business, and so forth, that the exclusion would have the effect of reducing various debt limits, levy limits, spending limits, and other provisions that are based on taxable market value. Once that was realized in August or September, whenever that was, the League of Cities, the Association of Counties, and some other groups convened or created a process whereby the Department of Revenue staff and legislative staff met to go through and come up with a bill draft that would address that problem so that essentially those limits would be held harmless from the change that resulted from an enactment of the market value exclusion. And this bill is the product that came out of that. And it's largely a bill that's supported by the League of Cities, the Association of Counties, and some other local government groups. The Department of Revenue was very helpful in the process, but it's not a Department of Revenue bill, and they're not endorsing it. But what the bill does, under current law, most of these limits are based on taxable market value. And because of the way the law is written, because of the way the Department of Revenue has administered that law, that had the effect of basically reducing the amount of debt limits and levy and market value-based levy limits, not the fundamental levy limits, which are not in effect now anyway, but these other sort of ancillary levy limits that apply typically to entities like housing and redevelopment authorities, economic development authorities, watershed districts, and so forth. So what the bill does is to move the standard on which those limits are based from taxable market value to estimated market value. And one way to think about this is you're sort of moving upstream before any of these changes are made to tax base. And those of us who are involved, one of the goals that was underlay going to taxable market value initially was those of us that were involved thought that that would insulate these limits from changes that the legislature typically enacted. Previous to that, these limits were based on assessed value, which was affected by changes in things like class rates, and which the legislature just tinkers with all the time. And so the movement was to go to taxable market value. But now that the legislature has gotten into exclusions, I think we concluded in order to insulate these limits and computations from that, we needed to move upstream, and so we moved. So the movement is to estimated market value, and so basically, what this bill does is to go through and change almost all of the statutes that limit various computations to or tie them to taxable market value, and change it to estimated market value, and estimated. And Steve is really the better one to talk about sort of the difference between estimated market value and taxable market value. But what this will do is will prevent the enactment of the exclusion from reducing debt limits that are based on market value, reducing levy limits and tax limits that are based on market value. And as you can see, there are like 100, I think there are 110 sections in this bill because there are so many provisions of law that are tied to market value that need to be changed as a result of this. So that's the sort of the general overview of what's going on. Mr. Hines has a table which I don't think has been copied for members. It was handed out in division that goes through the difference between the two calculations, which might be useful. I don't think you want us to go through the bill and talk about all the individual sections, because most of that's, I don't think this has been reviewed by the affected governmental units. I'll turn it over to Steve and he can go through a little bit more detail and talk. There is an estimated revenue effect of this bill because of that. You may want explanation of that either from Mr. Hines or from the Department of Revenue.
Thank you, Mr. Michael. And we members, you do have a revenue note from the department on this bill. So we might just have Ms. Schill or Ms. Temple come down and just briefly go through that since it's pretty minor. But let's hear from Mr. Hines first. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir. Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, was a local revenue or local impact note requested on this?
No, there was not.
All right. Mr. Chair, it would be helpful if we did know that prior to floor debate.
Okay. Thank you. We will take note of that. And Mr. Hines. Thank you, Representative Biskins.
Mr. Chair, Steve Hines from House Research. Did you get a one-page table like this in the folders? May not be necessary, but
we'll have that passed out. I want members to have that.
Oh,
yes.
I'm not sure how critical it is to have that, but it just sort of helps to maybe explain some of the terminology that you'll hear if we, depending on how much detail we get into on this bill. Prior to the 2011 session, we had many places in statute where we referred to just the term market value, and the term market value had become to be thought of as, or department had generally defined market value to be the taxable market value, which Joel alluded to most of this, I'm just kind of restating it, to be after a few, the term estimated market value refers to really the value that the assessor thinks the property is worth on a individual property basis and on an aggregate basis. It's the value the assessor thought all the properties were worth. And in the past, we haven't used that terminology as much. We have a different term called taxable market value, which refers to, there are a laundry list that's on this chart we handed out of minor, mostly minor reductions to the estimated market value to get you to the term called taxable market value. And if we now have that chart, you can see that down at step number 14 in the list, up until 2011, that would have been taxable market value. The statewide total of that amount is $551 billion, which isn't so significant, but that was the term that governed lots of the levy limits and debt limits statutes that Mr. Michael referred to. The Department of Revenue's interpretation was that once we passed the limited market or the exclusion, the homestead market value exclusion, that taxable market value now lost that $29 billion that's shown and became $522 billion. Again, that number statewide isn't so important, but it is a significant part of the total, and so that some jurisdictions that face those limits all of a sudden faced a lower levy or debt limit than they would have in the past. And in trying to decide how to fix that, the thing that this group of us who were working on it came to was it was easier to just go all the way back to the term estimated market value to go back to the term that what assessors really think the property is worth. So this is kind of just the outline of the terminology, and we've now taken basically every occurrence of the word, the term market value in statutes, and now referred to, in most cases, estimated market value, although in each case a decision had to be made about whether that was really the appropriate measure. In some cases it was appropriate that would be the taxable market value, but by and large, that's what the bill does. And to just give a brief reference to this fiscal note, should I do that or should I wait for...
Why don't you go ahead if you'd like.
There is a fiscal note which reflects the fact that the Department of Revenue, in looking at the bill, did determine that by going to estimated market value, there would be some increase in levy authority for these types of jurisdictions, housing and redevelopment authorities, et cetera, that are up against their limit, that could cause a levy increase and resulting in a fiscal note of, you'll see, $400,000 per year, which is the PTR cost, basically, and the income tax interaction of this possible potential levy increase. And that's why there is a little bit of a cost to this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Hines. Any questions from members for Mr. Hines? How much time did you spend on this bill putting it together?
Mr. Chair, I think Mr. Michael and Mr. Carlson and Mr. Carlson probably spent a lot more time than I did.
Must have been like eating broken glass or watching corn. Or something.
I think that's a good analogy, Mr. Okay. Chair.
If there's no questions for Mr. Hines, we'll go to Mr. Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Keith Carlson, Minnesota Intercounty Associations. I apologize that I was late. I was testifying in the tax committee and the other body.
We were waiting for you.
I apologize. Mr. Gary Carlson cannot be here because of their legislative day, but I do want to reiterate the support of both counties and cities, as well as a number of other local governments and affected organizations for this bill. I think you've already heard the gist of it. I will just go over a little history on this. In 1988, practically all the sections that you see amended in this bill were converted from referencing assessed value to market value. The reason that occurred at that time is basically the state's tax base for purposes of administering the property tax went from the old concept of assessed value to the current concept of tax capacity. If we had not made those changes, two things would have happened. One, there would have been a reduction of the tax rate limits and debt limits by a factor of more than 10 because tax capacities were less than one-tenth of the old assessed values. But the other reason why it was a change to market value was basically so we wouldn't have to go through this exercise every time the legislature made changes in class rates. So in 1990, when we went to a reduced valuation for homesteads at that time, accompanying what at that time was the Homestead and Agricultural Credit Aid, no changes had to be made in any of these rate limitations because they reference market value, not tax capacity, not assessed value. And that basically was the status of all of these. So again, when we came to 2002, when there was a significant reduction in the class rate for commercial industrial property from 4% to 2%, no city, no county, no local government affected by these limitations saw those change whatsoever, even though the tax base had shrunk substantially. And so basically, going into this last session, there was an assumption that that same thing would operate. It was somewhat frustrated when, at relatively the last minute, we changed from doing the exclusion on a tax capacity basis, in which case none of this would have been needed, to a market value exclusion basis, which, along with an interpretation of the Department of Revenue, necessitated this bill. I want to make it clear to the committee, as we went through this exercise with your staff, with representatives of the Department of Revenue and the other body, our intent was basically to preserve the existing authorities, regardless of whether it was adverse or to the advantage of the affected entity. So nobody gained anything by the changes to this bill. Nobody lost anything by the changes to this bill. Basically, it maintains the status quo. With that, I'll conclude. Be happy to answer any questions.
Questions for Mr. Carlson. Person Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Mr. Carlson, I'm still trying to understand this bill, but does this bill then make it easier for municipalities to borrow?
Mr. Carl?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Druskowski, if you do not enact this bill, the debt rate limitations will go down, particularly for those communities with a lot of low-valued homes, which saw a lot of loss of tax base from the homestead exclusion. We don't know of anybody at this time that's affected by this, that is up to the limit, but the unfortunate fact of the matter is that the only time that the measurement is actually made, whether or not you're at your net debt limitation, is at the time that you go to issue new bonds. So it's perhaps exist out there that somebody is going to go and issue bonds, and if you don't enact this, all of a sudden they'll say, well, you have no capacity. You can't issue those street improvement bonds or so on. Again, we don't know of anybody who's up against their limits right now, but we do not have a systematic way of measuring that right now.
Representative Druskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks, Mr. Carlson. So same thing in the area of levy limits. Is that can you sure. talk about the interaction there?
Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Druskowski, first I want to make it clear the levy limits we're talking about here aren't the levy limits that the committee routinely revisits every year, which when they're in effect is a cap on the overall dollar amount that a city or county can levy. These are rate limitations that largely affect special taxing districts and in a few instances affect specific functions of counties or cities. Those functions generally fall in the area of economic development. So to the extent that a city or a county has an EDA or an HRA, those limits apply. Again, depending on the how much you lost in terms of tax base as the result of the homestead exclusion, this may be of no consequences. For many of the larger metro cities, they lost less than 5%. Some of them lost less than a single digit. Whereas when you get to the smaller cities, frequently in greater Minnesota, they may have lost as much as 30% of their tax base. It has a consequence, their authority to levy for the housing, the redevelopment that they may do through their EDAs or HRAs would be compromised to that extent if you do not pass this bill.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Mr. Carlson, so as a legislator, if I was interested in protecting local property tax exposure of local property taxpayers, I probably wouldn't be interested in this bill. Is that accurate?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Drazkowski, again, it only affects very narrow functions. As far as the day-to-day operation of a city or county, this bill has no consequence. It's in those very narrow ranges of functions. The much larger issue, frankly, exists for the special taxing districts, the watersheds, Three Rivers Park District, the special levy that is done on behalf of the Minneapolis Institute of Arts, Three Rivers Park Districts. There is the instance where you're going to see much larger effects. You know, certainly cities and counties want to maintain their authority with regards to economic development, housing redevelopment, but it's not going to have a great deal of effect except for those special functions. Again, I think the larger issue is for the special taxing jurisdictions.
Representative Drazkowski, you still have the floor, but I just want to interject here. When the bill was passed last year, there was no intention, and we did not know from the department that they were going to interpret things the way they did. And I'm not going to go back and play the blame game or anything like that. I'm not doing that. What I'm saying is this is basically to get us where we should be. We did not mean to be affecting those various jurisdictions as far as the levels go. So this bill simply is to get us back to where we thought we were. No more, no less. Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to that point, it relates to this. It seems, Mr. Chair, that the interpretation the department made may have been to the advantage of the property taxpayer, especially over a longer period of time, Mr. Carlson. I understand the exposure is limited to these certain situations and only when they do go to let bonds, et cetera. But over a period of 20 or 30 years, a municipality, I would expect, might consider that. So the way it appears and what I'm hearing is if we are in favor of moving this bill forward, we're actually over that period of 20 or 30 years, especially in those municipalities that have those special taxing districts you talked about or entities you talked about, we're going to actually provide increased property tax exposure to those taxpayers by pushing this bill forward. Is that accurate?
Mr.
Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Drazkowski, yes, at the margin. Mr. Hines already went over the revenue analysis of this bill, and basically it identifies $4 million of additional tax authority, I believe, that they say could be exercised under this bill that can't be exercised beginning in 2013. It's a delayed effective date as far as these tax rate limitations. But I won't argue with your supposition, but everybody did not intend this consequence. And I've passed out a document from the Department of Revenue, excerpted from their Auditor Treasurer's Manual that basically says the same thing down in the right-hand box on that.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Drazkowski.
Okay.
Okay, questions? Representative Rukavina.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I apologize. I had some constituents in my office, but, you know, there were unintended consequences of as a result of last year's tax bill with suggestions that were made, Mr. Carlson, by you and I think other Mr. Carlsons. And, you know, members, I came in here with some mineral taxes, my good friend, Mr. Keith Carlson. You know, I, as Tim Strom described best, I think, when I was trying to understand a certain school district money with taconite taxes that I can't even still understand. It's because Mr. Carlson helped draft those laws years ago. And I'm still suffering because of it. And I just want to be assured that when I see Section 30 and 31 and with disparity reduction aids and credits, and then 36 and 37 and 38 and 39 that have to do with the Iron Range Fiscal Disparity District, which was fashioned after the Metropolitan one, that there's not going to be another unintended consequences where the property taxpayers are going to have to, as Representative Druskowski pointed out, pick up a little bit more on their property taxes because of what happened and the unintended consequences last year. So, Mr. Carlson, on the record, please assure me that all the things that you helped do to my constituents 20 and 30 years ago aren't going to happen, and you're not doing them again to them again this year, the same thing. Can you assure me of that?
Mr. Carlson,
careful. Mr. Chairman, Representative Rukavina, I assure you that we are not adversely affecting you constituents. By passing this bill, you will be preserving the existing level of disparity reduction aid to your constituents. If you don't pass it, it will go down. I will also tell the committee as a whole, if you do not pass this bill, that there will be an issue with the fire aid distribution, half of which is distributed based on market values. And if you happen to be at the short end, lost a lot of market value as a result of the homestead exclusion, your distribution will go down based on a strict reading of the statutes. This clarifies that. Again, this cuts both ways for local governments. There's another provision in here regarding when a city, conceivably a county, but it would usually be cities, could exercise eminent domain authority for economic development purposes. You basically have to reach a threshold that 50% of the 50% of the value of a property is in need of a substantial rehabilitation. If you don't correct that, the threshold will be lower. I'm sure the intent is that it be higher. Again, you need this bill to correct that.
Representative Rukavina.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Carlson, you didn't mention the Iron Range fiscal disparity different sections in here, and I'm just wondering, is the same, and I don't see it, for the Metropolitan Fiscal Disparities District, the same?
Mr.
Carlson?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Rukavina, identical changes are made in both the Metro and the Range Fiscal Disparities, and they preserve the status quo.
Representative Rukavina?
I'm still figuring out what Byzantine means.
I don't think I said that.
Just a couple
say
years
that
ago.
It did yesterday.
Okay.
Do I wear purple? That's all I want to know.
Questions for Mr. Carlson? Okay, thank you, Mr. Carlson. Is there anyone in the audience which testify on behalf of 2072 or with concerns thereof? Ms. Schell.
Mr. Chair and members, I'd like to point out that the fiscal impact, the revenue note for House File 2072, the impact takes place in the out years, and that impact does not start until fiscal 14. So the impact fiscal 12 and 13 is zero. Fiscal 14 and 15 has a cost of $400,000. Once again, all interaction per year. So the total in FY 14 and 15 is $800,000.
Thank you. Any questions for Ms. Schell? Thank you, Michelle. If I could have Mr. Cummins from the department step to the table here for a second. Cummings? Mr. Cummings. Or someone. Mr. Nord or...
No,
whoever, or commissioner's office. Okay. Please state your name and who you represent for the record.
Paul Cummings with the Department of Revenue.
Welcome. Okay, just a couple quick questions here. First of all, I think Mr. Michael stated that the department does not support this bill. My question is, do they oppose this bill?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we don't have a position on this bill. I know that the department did send a memo to Chair Davids and Chair Ortman, I think in September, October, talking about some of the things that could be updated as it related to the market value credit and exclusion. This was one of them. So we are, we have worked, as Mr. Michael said and Mr. Hines said, our department has worked with legal staff, but on this particular provision, the department is not taking a position in favor or in opposition.
Well, Mr. Cummings, you begs the question in the letter of September, I believe it was, you recommended these changes. If you're recommending these changes, why do you not support the changes you recommended?
We, in this particular provision, we wanted to make sure that that people knew about some changes that could be made, but we also understand that changes that are being made to something that happened in last year's special session may have been controversial, and the department didn't want to necessarily get involved in that discussion on whether changes on corrections should be made to the market value credit exclusion, or if there should be some sort of other correction that should be made that should be larger. We decided not to take a position on that. So we're coming to you today with not in favor or in opposition of this provision, but we did want to make sure that you were aware of the problems that came up as it related to this.
Mr. Cummings, why were we not made aware of these issues during special session?
There, I know that everyone was trying to make the best of a situation that we were trying to do. If there were a possibility in order to make sure that these could have been dealt with, I'm sure that that's something that would have been done. I don't think it was anyone's intention in order to try and take a very, very complicated issue. I don't think there was any intention in order to do that. The Department of Revenue had a limited staff at that time as well.
Well, Mr. Cummings, the department knew about this in May. It was in the bill in May. This is not just an issue of special session. Why didn't the department bring this to my attention in May?
I know as bills move towards actual enactment, there are many things that continue to be found in order to make sure we're clarifying. The policy and technical bills that's that came before the body that you so graciously have made into your bills also include other provisions that are trying to make sure that that are making technical corrections in order to make sure that policies work. And some of those things, as you continue to implement provisions, you continue to find provisions that could be updated or made better or made to work better for taxpayers. And that was the case in this case. As this was implemented and as there were interactions that happened with various people who were trying to implement these provisions, some of these ways in which to make them better came to light. And that is why the department decided to make sure that you and Chair Portman were aware of these problems.
You know, I find it interesting the department, for example, disagrees with maintaining FLCs and unitary, and that's just policy disagreement. That's fine. I have no problem with that. But yet in the technical bills that the governor has, they're making changes in their bill for that. If so, do you favor your own technical and policy bills?
I'm sorry, the making changes to FOC.
Well, in the policy and technical bills, Mr. Cummings, there are changes to FOCs and unitary, some technical changes.
Yes.
So do you support your own bill?
The changes that are made in order to whether it's to, you know, clarify a statute in order to make it more clear or to make minor policy improvements. Those are obviously corrections that we support as a department.
But, Mr. Cummings, isn't 2072 making minor policy corrections and improvements?
Yes.
Then why don't you support it?
There's a considerable amount of controversy that took place in the provision that came before as this moved forward. And the department, there were other provisions that could have been included in the policy and technical bill that were considered, but many times when they're controversial, they're taken out for various reasons. And so this wasn't, so many of those provisions that maybe were controversial, that were minor in nature, were not in the policy and technical bill, and this was not either. So we're not taking a position in favor, and we're not taking a position in opposition to the change that you've made here.
Okay. Well, I'll just lay it on the line right now, Mr. Cummings. We either get support from the Department of Revenue on House File 2072, or the policy and technical bills will see the same fate. So just you might want to take that message back, if you would, please, sir, because this is simply a fix for, I consider it a misinterpretation by the department, but you made the interpretation. That's fine. You're the department. You can do that. Okay, so let's just be very clear that the governor's bills go nowhere unless 2072 is included, because all it does is it fixes unintended consequences, because the department interpreted something that I disagree with. That's fine. You can interpret things the way you want to. But we should also be able to fix it on a bipartisan basis. So that's the message. Okay, Representative Draskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Cummins, you mentioned that the change to the exclusion created problems in this area. Can you characterize what the problems are? Are there technical problems for the department in implementing the law, or are you referring to just policy disparities now compared to then in regard to cities and their capacities to apply debt and taxes to their taxpayers?
Well, I wanted to, Mr. Chair, Representative Draskowski, I wanted to make sure that there were some technical issues in order to try and, how does this actually functionally work? How do we make this work in terms of administering the provisions that were laid out? And there were some technical and administrative issues in terms of how do we functionalize that, and I think you see that in the bill before you. As you mentioned, that there was a lot of policy, that there was a larger discussion that happened about the change to the market value credit into the exclusion. And for that reason, we wanted to make sure that the department was as supportive as possible in trying to make sure that those that any of our expertise was made, while at the same time making sure that we're not rehashing a political discussion about the larger kind of the larger policy issues, and that we were trying to be helpful in taking care of many of the technical issues.
Representative Draskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Mr. Cummins, help me understand these technical issues. So, does the department technically have, is it problematic technically for the department to continue with current law the way it is into the future without this bill before us?
Mr. Cummings?
I think Mr. Nord, who works in our property tax division, can maybe speak to some of the things that were brought up today in terms of some of the issues that are occurring with these.
Okay, and we'll go to Mr. Nord. Mr. Draskowski still has the floor, so just keep that question in your mind there. But I am somewhat astounded today that we're saying that a technical fix to the law, whether it's controversial or not controversial, is an issue. And Mr. Cummings, you are probably just at the wrong place at the wrong time, would be my guess right now, because you do a very, very good job for the governor, for the department. You are one of the best, okay? But I don't know if you're the right person to be handling these questions. Maybe you are, maybe you're not. I mean, you're very capable. I'm not saying that, but I don't know if we need Ms. Von Mosch to come over, yeah, or I want to phone a friend. if you can, and not that you're not doing a good job. You're
right.
Doing a great job, but I feel like maybe you're not the one that should be asked these questions, because I'm somewhat taken aback here by what's going on. I mean, this is simply a technical fix bill because of a misinterpretation by the department. Now, maybe it's not a misinterpretation in my mind. It is. Maybe some people don't believe it is, and that's fine. But I'm not trying to pile on here. I'm just a bit stunned right now. And so with that, we'll continue with the Drazkowski question. But if you feel we need to defer some things for a later time, we'll do that. Because if 2072 doesn't go on the bill, none of it's going. Because I'm just not feeling the love right now. And I need to feel the love, Mr. Cummings, on the governor's position on 2072. So, and I think we can get there. We're close. I feel we're close. But we need to feel the love. Representative Drazkowski, could you please repeat your question to Mr. Nord?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Nord, we are where we're at in terms of the law right now. Are there any technical problems for the department in moving forward and implementing the law with the way it is now? Or will the world fall apart if we don't have this bill? That's a question I want to know. In term, technically, from your department's end.
Will the world
end? Sure.
Mr. Nord, please state your name and who registered for the record, please.
Sure. I'm Jason Nord, State Program Administrator Director for the Department of Revenue.
Welcome to committee, sir.
Thank you. Mr. Chair and Representative Drazkowski, there are certainly, There's different manners of technical errors, I would say. So when something just, when there's a missing cross-reference or a missing word, just overlooking a bad cross-reference or overlooking a missing word, no big deal. I think the nature of some of these changes is a little bit great. Some of these changes are that simple, perhaps, but some of these changes maybe involve a choice. When a statute refers to market value, and you're not sure whether it should be estimated market value or it should be taxable market value, I mean, we've tried to make the people involved in putting this bill together all sat around and talked about in which case would EMV be more appropriate, in which case would TMV be more appropriate. And we think we've made very appropriate determinations. But they involve some judgment call. They're not just clear cut. So the answer is there would be some definite situations where there would be awkwardness, where the law explicitly says one thing, but it's silent on a bunch of factors, and then we would have to make a determination. And to essentially ignore the words on the paper to try and apply the intent of the law, or to follow the words on the paper, even if that creates headaches. And so it definitely puts us in an awkward position to have to make a lot of decisions like that if a bill like this doesn't pass. And so it does provide some excellent clarification. But we can always make whatever the law is work. Whether that makes everybody happy or not would remain to be seen, I guess.
Person Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that answers my question.
Well, Mr. Nord, it appears to me that House File 2072 would clarify some things and make your life easier. Why can't you support it?
Mr. Chair, I think that's a question.
I'm in not the wrong place at the wrong time.
Okay, maybe Mr. Nord, we'll get to the commissioner's office and try to figure out how to make your life easier. Russell Lincheski, then Mark Court, Rukavina Downer. Russell Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, just a thought on, the questions you're asking. And, my memory, Mr. Chair, of how we got to this position is that the House passed the omnibus tax bill last year. And, Mr. Chair, you didn't dream up this getting rid of the homestead credit, and you didn't dream up this market value exclusion. The House tax bill cut LGA to pay for what it wanted to do in the tax bill. And as you know, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate it, I was a conferee at that time, and that was not the House who dreamt this whole problem up. It was the Senate. So, I think there's a long history around here of the Senate being the problem. And and it was when I had
Representative
to deal.
Chesky, if you didn't have one, you wouldn't need one.
Yeah, well, Mr. Chair, and just for the record, so people can understand, there's a lot of people trying to blame this side or that side about who came up with this, and it was the Senate. It was not you, Mr. Chair, and it was not the governor. It was the Senate who dreamt up this whole market value exclusion thing. And Senator Ortman carried it forward in her original Senate bill, and Representative Loon knows this as well as another conferee, and Representative Anderson knows this well as another conferee, and Representative Runvick knows this very well. Senator Ortman's bill carried a tax capacity change. She later, and it came out of the conferee, with the exclusion. So this originated, yes, in the end, the majority, along with the governor, ultimately enacted these provisions during shutdown. But I've watched sides try to point the finger at one another, and the folks who created the problem aren't here. The governors in the House, the Senate, so if we want to talk about which staff should have found all these problems, the originators of the idea, the Senate tax staff, should have found all these problems. So, I mean, I don't really feel that it's the Department of Revenue's issue in a shutdown. I mean, we all remember the pictures of the chains on the steps, and people couldn't get through the tunnels, and there was very limited staff around here, and I think we've all been through that, Mr. Chair, where people do things, and then there's a problem later. But if anybody should have figured this all out and known this since May, it was Senator Ortman and her staff, because this was their idea. And she'll probably hear me saying this now and challenge me on that, but it is where this idea came from. And so it was the due diligence of the creators of this, who had assistance from some people in this room, in the lobbying community, for assisting Senator Ortman and her staff to design this exclusion as opposed to her original proposal, which was net tax capacity. So, you know, I don't think it's particularly fruitful to sort of say who in this room between the House and the Department of Revenue should have found the problems. I think it's the senators should have found the problems. And I hope they're going to go to bat to fix the problems they created. But I will tell you, Mr. Chair, just listening, I mean, I have a hard time understanding why, with no offense to the department, why the technical bill, the policy bill, this bill, or the public finance bill has to pass this year. I don't see, if they were important, why weren't they in the omnibus tax bill? So, I think we need to get some answers, not only from the commissioner, Mr. Chair, but from the Senate, as to why they didn't find all the problems they created. So that's my comment.
Well, Representative Chesky, I couldn't agree with you more. and Mr. Cummings, like I said, I'm a bit stunned that the department wouldn't support this bill, but I'm not. We'll talk to, I'll talk to Commissioner Franz and others to see if we can't come to some agreement here. So I don't mean to be critical of you, and I really didn't want to go there with the blame game because. I think Representative Chesky described it well, and we'll just leave it at that. So that's not where I'm going. I just want to get this solved so that we get to what the intent of the original legislation was. We did not mean to lower anything for any unit of government for their capacity. I mean, they're planning for these things, and it was not my intention to do that. I just want to get back to where I wanted to be. That's all I'm doing here. And yes, some could say, and Representative Drazkowski points out that, hey, we're lowering what people are going to be taxed here. That was not my intent. It was my intent to leave those things alone. And so I think I might need to phone a friend and
Ortman.
Very important.
The governor. Okay, we have Representative Marquardt and Rukavina. Representative Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And, you know, we could have saved 1 hour of debate and $260 million of increased property taxes last year if we just wouldn't have eliminated the homestead credit. I mean, let's face it, that's why we're here today. And, Mr. Chair, I mean, for you to kind of tell to the Department of Revenue that they should have told you something and should have warned you of something, you know, the homestead credit elimination started March 16th in the Property Tax Division and was voted on three times in committee and three times on the full House floor, six different times. And I think on almost every time, a few times we offered amendments, but I think on almost every time we talked about opposition. And I do know a few times last year we talked about the huge property tax ramifications this was going to have, and no one wanted to listen to that. So I don't even know if someone had made a mention, if it would have changed anything. So, this certainly wasn't something that came out of the governor's office. In fact, the governor's budget never had this in. In fact, didn't cut any property tax aids or credits. Then when he had a supplemental budget about a month later in March, there were no cuts to property aids and credits. When he vetoed the tax bill that came from the House and Senate, he specifically cited one of the reasons for the veto was the elimination of the homestead credit. So, you know, to all of a sudden come here today and blame the Revenue Department for not giving you all the bad things that could have happened. I think there was plenty of warning last year, and I guess, you know, I'm not going to say more because we had this discussion in property tax division the other night, but I mean, you know, we could just restore the homestead credit and solve this entire problem. But Representative Druskowski, you're exactly right. This bill, as explained by the Department of Revenue and Mr. Ouellette the other day, will increase property taxes by about $4 million because of those who are right at that limit who just pop right back. So you're exactly right in your questions that, you know, here we just raised property taxes, $370 million. This bill is going to increase property taxes $4 million more than without this bill. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Markport. And a couple things. First of all, this my bill does not increase property taxes $4 million. It gives local units of government the authority to exercise their authority up to that amount. So could it happen? Yes, it could. That's correct. And I really didn't want to blame anybody. I was just asking the question, you know, why weren't we informed? I don't think that's really blaming anybody, just a simple question. You know, it would have been nice to get that a little bit earlier. But like I said, I don't want to give the blame game. It all boils down, Representative Marquardt. Oh, I used his name. Oh, you can talk. You can talk to me. It all boils down. Ms. Von Mosch, you want to join us here? We've missed you. Mr. Ouellette or whoever. Ms. Von Mosch.
She stepped in the hall, I believe.
Mr. Chair?
Oh.
Are you going to tell Ms. Von Mosch before she talks that I blamed the Senate?
Not oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Yes. I would. It all boils down to yes. Marquardt. This, I mean, the law is the law. Whether you like it or not, vote for or against it, it's the law. Okay? It all has to do with the interpretation by the department of the word exclusion. And so that's where we're going to try and work through. Ms. Von Mosch.
Hold on, Mr. Chair. May I?
Just a second. Ms. Von Mosch, we've got a few questions here for you. But I just want to be
Good
very
morning.
Clear that the consternation that we're having here today is all the Senate's fault.
Yes.
As Representative Chesky has stated. So we're conspiring to figure out how to correct this because of what the Senate did. Okay, because we're here to help, because we care. Ms. Von Mosch, we have a couple questions. I guess Representative Rukavina, you do have the floor.
Well, Mr. Chair, first of all, you know, I have to tell you this. Other than the fact that you're about 150 pounds heavier than me and a couple feet taller, you and I are kind of just alike. We have the ability to tell somebody to go to hell and they think it's going to be a nice trip. So, and I, you know.
We got to make them look forward
yeah,
to it.
And exactly. And, you know, your treatment of Mr. Cummins was very gracious, I have to tell you that. And Paul is a really good guy. But I think the problem is here is he didn't want to tell you that. You know, that the department supports you guys trying to fix up a mess that happened last year because the market value homestead credit became the market value exclusion. And I think that's what they're trying to just politely say, that we're neutral because we didn't cause this mess, you didn't cause this mess, but we don't support the exclusion over the homestead credit. It's kind of as simple as that. But I just admire you because, and I'm going to even gain weight and try to grow because I want to be just like you when I grow up.
Rukavina, Representative Rukavina, I'm twice the man I used to be. Okay, but it does beg the question, Representative Rukavina, the law is the law. And if we can make their life easier, why wouldn't they support that? Whether they like the law, I hope that's not the reason that they're neutral, is because they don't like what we did. We did what we did. The governor signed it. I voted for it, the governor signed it, and here we are. Ms. Von Mosch, the question is, you know, we're going to put five bills together. That's what my intention is. The governor's, Mr. Patrick, where's those five bills? The five issues, right there. Okay, what I'm planning to do, just so members know, is to take the governor's policy bill, the governor's technical bill. Why do all these non-controversial bills create so much controversy? Do you ever wonder that? I'm just saying.
It's called politics.
The Davids 2072, the Runbeck 2530, that's just one where we're getting rid of some obsolete statutes that I think everybody loves. You support that one, Ms. Von Mosch?
Mr. Chair, I don't think we've actually officially taken a position on
that. Please state your name and who represents.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. Susan Von Mosch with the Department of Revenue.
Thank you, Ms. Von Mosch.
Mr. Chair, I don't believe we've taken a position on that bill either.
Why?
We just haven't officially taken a position
that's
on
fine.
It.
That's fine. And then the David's Public Finance Bill, which is just kind of normal, okay. Just nothing. Okay? Okay, so those five bills are going to become the Omnibus Technical Policy Non-Controversial Bill. That's what we're doing. And today I find out that the Department of Revenue is not endorsing or supporting House File 2072, not opposing, but not endorsing. And the way I see House File 2072, it, because of a department interpretation, and that's fine, you interpret things the way you do, on the word exclusion, that it's creating some issues where local units of government will have lower authority on issuing debt and some things like that. And that was never the intention of the bill. But because of department interpretation, which you have the right to do, you interpreted the word exclusion differently than I did, we're at the point where we're at. So we have a bill, House File 2072, to make your life so much easier. Why wouldn't you endorse it or support it?
Mr. Chair, members, thank you. The Senate was so much more tame today than this committee, so I'm sorry I missed the beginning part of this. Oh, I should say the other body. The department did identify some issues in October of 2011 and some concerns with the drafting of the market value homestead exclusion. And at that time, we sent letters to you, Mr. Chair, and to Senator Ortman, highlighting some of the issues and making you aware of some of the issues that the department was encountering with trying to implement the new market value exclusion. We, as we were working through this process, we became aware that there were some possible different ways to interpret a correction. And as I think probably Mr. Nord has indicated to you, the way the department would have interpreted the corrections, it would have actually lowered the levies for various jurisdictions. But there is another solution out there that would have increased the levies. And we just felt that there was some uncertainty out there about which would be the right approach to take. So the department decided to really not weigh into the fray with a formal position. We have heard... We have made our professional staff available to work with the legislative staff and to work with staff from the county and the city associations. We've been very involved in that process. But ultimately, we have not taken an official position on this bill. We continue to work with the legislators and the legislative process to make sure that the bill is as workable as possible. But we do not have an official position on the bill.
Okay. And now I'm even a little bit more confused, Ms. Von Mosch, because some of the things you referred to were not in your letter. We'll need to review the letter and see what's going on here, because you seem like you have a moving target here. Okay. Members, with that, I think, unless there's questions for Ms. Von Mosch, I really, you know, and Mr. Cummins, like I said, you're wonderful. You've been great to work with. And Mr. Nord and Ms. Von Mosch, and the department, and Mr. Willett, we love you too. Sorry.
Thank you. Sorry.
You're awesome, you know. Okay, so then what we have here is a failure to communicate, it seems, but we can work through that. But now I'm really confused, because you were so gracious to allow your staff and folks to work with the A-team. You know who the A-team is. Michael and
Mr. Hines
and others. Mm-hmm. Are those the two that you worked with on these issues? Manzi, Dalton? Okay. Okay. So you put, did Mr. Michael and Mr. Hines cooperate?
Mr. Chair, I was not intimately involved in the process, but I would assume that, yes, they did.
Mr. North, did Mr. Michael and Hines cooperate?
Mr. Chair, yes, they did. They're very helpful.
Did they take your suggestions of how we need to fix this?
Mr. Chair, yes, they did.
Well, then why don't you support this? I'm just, okay. With that, members, we're going nowhere very quickly here. Okay, so with that, that's the hearing for 2072. Stay tuned, members. Good government all the time. We are adjourned. See you Tuesday.